One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, pounding an ice-cold passion fruit LaCroix, and sitting across from me, the man, the myth, the legend. I don't see yeah, his LaCroix over there too, Mr. Kyle Filio-Filson.
How's it going? I am enjoying, what flavor is this? Cran raspberry.
Woo, we've got a mixture going now.
We actually had quite a few fans email us about what they like, if they
which ones to try.
Yeah. Which ones to try. Yeah, and so we got a, I also want to recommend La Perrier. They have a what kind of crisp green apple.
Whoa, really?
It's very good.
Is yeah, it? I'm not a big green apple fan.
But it's just a hint. It's like a nuance. It doesn't taste like it. You know what I mean?
How old do you have to be all giddy about flavored water?
Well, trying to slow down the soda intake. I mean, I was getting to where I was drinking two Dr. Peppers a day.
And that's iced tea. Man, I was drinking a lot of iced tea.
That's got just as much sugar,
yeah,
too, you know?
Yeah, man. So I was just like, I got to cut back. So we went to winding them back. And it's not near as much fun. Let me ask you this.
You can spill vodka in it, and it tastes pretty good.
Oops. Did you notice when you started laying off like the sugars and started getting like headaches and not feeling right?
Yeah.
I noticed a weird change, like something different.
What I noticed is the cravings for like sodas or sugary stuff kind of went away really quick. Like I used to have an impending craving for it every day, and literally like 6 days after not doing it, really didn't crave it anymore.
But I just noticed I didn't feel right for the first few days. Hmm. Like it's like a drug, like your body's shaking it off. It's weird.
I have a question, and I'm sure people are going to be screaming at their car set or their podcast catcher or their phone or whatever when I ask this, but I don't know. What's the difference between tonic water and club soda? Besides one, quinine is in one of them. Tonic water, I believe.
I know
but you know what I mean?
Club soda's like ginger ale, right?
No.
Or is that a different one, too? Is that a third? The trifecta
of
clear bubbly?
I'm not a bartender, but you know, there's club soda, and then there's like sparkling water, mineral water, and then there's tonic water.
The tonic water's real fizzy, isn't it?
Yeah, but so is club soda.
But I think I remember grabbing,
I know that tonic water has quinine in it. I don't know why I remember that. Because, you know, only the younger generation, they're drinking Red Bull and vodka. They're drinking Lean and stuff. They're not drinking Harvey Wallbangers or I'll have a gin and tonic.
You didn't drink Lean when you was coming up?
I didn't even know what that was.
We had the real.
I was real lean until I was about 29.
I got pictures of it. Remember? I just pulled up video of it. Yeah. Folks, I've been rendering video footage of Kyle and I when we were in our 20s running around doing stuff. And now I've got video footage of Kyle and I. What do you think we are at that hockey game? Like 12 or 13?
Yeah.
Maybe 14? Maybe 14 at the oldest.
I can't wait till you release some of that because most people don't believe that we've been doing crazy stuff since we were little kids. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, if we can find the old video, there's some videos of us cleaning your pool and we've got mohawks.
You saw that on the disc I gave you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See, my mother took a bunch of the old VHS tapes and was paying people to convert them to DVDs. And she's not aware of technology. I'm like, oh, I have a capture card and stuff. You know, I can do all that for free. But anyway, so Cam got this wild idea. We're trying to come up with some good B-roll to create like a sizzle reel or something of our escapades for our new upcoming YouTube channel. And I was like, hey, man, my mom's got a bunch of DVDs of us when we were kids. He's like, well, bring them by. I'd like to take a look at them. And so I dropped a couple of them off. But there is probably 100 VHS tapes that have not been converted to DVD.
Yeah.
And there's no telling what's on there.
I hope I can find the one where we're shooting bottle rockets at your little brother.
Mm. I've even got some where it's the not Betamax, but after VHS, they started coming out with these little tapes.
Well, they were thinner.
They would fit inside of a fake VHS tape.
Yeah, the small, the VHS-Cs for compact.
Okay, I've got a couple of those. There's no telling what's on there.
Yeah.
But that's going to be after the VHS, so we're going to be older in those videos.
Yeah. The ones that I'm talking about, folks, is we took PVC and we put beer cans over the end of PVC and we duct taped it on like a piece of like 4 foot long. And then we made us some handles out of whatever we could find. And we like mounted those to the PVC like they were RPGs, like when you used to watch the old movie Red Dawn. And then we would we'd break the sticks off of bottle rockets and then we would light them. And I'd like tilt it up and Kyle would drop it in there standing behind me and he'd smack me on top of the head like you see in all the movies. And I would launch bottle rockets out of that thing. And the best ones were the ones that actually had the plastic fins where they would stand up because we would get them to fit. Well, then we started shooting them at his little brother off the deck of their pool deck. And we were launching them at him probably 60, 70 yards away. Mm. And that one he dove at and I almost hit him. Boy, I almost. And now he's a firefighter and EMT in the city of Arlington.
Well, and you know, they're like, I don't think they're even legal now. I think they're outlawed, those bottle rockets. But you used to be able to buy bushels of them for nothing. I mean, I remember we went to cross the state line over to Louisiana, and you could just go in a gas station there.
Don't tell everybody this.
And then you could buy like 100 bottle rockets, legit, would be like $6.
I remember us getting them out of
your
barn.
So many that you would get tired of shooting them.
Yeah, we got them out of your barn, and they were bundled in packs of 20. And we had 2 5-gallon buckets plumb full of them, like stacked on top with the stick sticking out. And literally, we shot them till we got bored. And when you're talking about a young preteen shooting bottle rockets at one another till you get bored,
it
even carried on further up into life because I remember bringing my truck to Kyle's house. I drove up to Kyle had a long driveway, and I'm driving down the driveway, and to the right there was a cluster of live oak trees, and I didn't see them, and it was him and his dad and his brother. And I'm driving down the driveway, and a rocket comes out of that tree line and hits the windshield of my truck.
I forgot about that.
And bounces straight. That's when we had to go put out the fire in the neighbor's place.
When the fire department, back in those days, if you would call that there was a grass fire, they would come up and somebody would have to pay for it. Like, they wanted to know who was responsible. My dad would always go, oh, I saw these teenagers drive down the road and they threw some stuff out. Did that 4 or 5 times until they finally caught on. Then they hit them with a fine.
Yeah.
But that's what my dad used to do. He used to have these big metal, 55-gallon metal drums outside of the workshop there. And he would smash and stamp, you know, you could stomp on your beer cans and be flat, pancake them. He would smash them and throw them in that 55-gallon drum all year long. And when 4th of July rolled around, we'd go trade them in. And whatever money we raised from that, we were allowed to use on firecrackers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be surprised. You got $300 or $400 back in that, you know, 1985. You could buy a ton of fireworks.
So
we had so much ordnance. I mean,
and then that cannon.
Yeah, we had a real cannon.
We had a cannon because we'd buy a cannon. That's what we always laughed about. We never could buy spray paint, but they would sell us a pound of Pyrodex and like 3 or 4 feet of cannon fuse.
Yeah, it was illegal.
It was awesome.
They'd card you if you wanted to buy spray paint. Cannon
or
fuse.
Or modeling glue because we couldn't build models without your parents buying us modeling glue.
Yeah.
But we could buy gunpowder and cannon fuse all day.
And no one even asked you what you were doing with it.
No, we would buy bricks of 22 shells and they'd just be like, we'll see you boys later. And that was it. That was it.
Different times.
Enough. Y'all are going to see a lot of this stuff on video. We've got a bunch of these videos, and I got to start going through them, especially when we get back from Colorado where I can really sit down, because it's going to be hours and hours of going through and finding the best stuff and getting it. So y'all get ready. We're going to have some crazy stuff going. But on a sadder note, folks, J.C. Johnson passed away this weekend, y'all.
Yeah,
Crypto Four Corners fella. Yeah, dude, he had been on there with Lon. He'd been on there with a bunch of folks, and I had actually been in touch with J.C. last year about coming on the podcast and all that stuff. Well, he ended up passing away. He had a lung illness. Ended up getting sick. I don't really know what it ended up being, but he'd been in the hospital for several weeks, and they had to put him in a medically induced coma trying to get him over all this stuff, and then I don't guess he ever came out. So it was Saturday morning, the 3rd of February, that he passed away. Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible, man.
It was awful. He was a great dude. He was fun to listen to. He was great telling stories and had some crazy stuff happen. Dude, it was wild. But yeah, good guy, good dude, fun to talk to, the whole thing. All right. Now we're going to shift gears, all right, and this whole deal. We're going to get a little more fun. A few weeks ago, I had told y'all off of Cryptozoology News about a Neanderthal sighting.
That was in Portugal, right?
Yes, yep. The older woman was talking about that, right?
I remember that. Yeah, they were living in a cave.
Yeah, she saw a couple. Her and her sister saw a couple of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we've got another sighting, folks. This took place in Finland.
Wait a minute. I don't think Finland's a real country, right? Oh, isn't that one of the conspiracy theories?
It's one of the new conspiracy theories. It's not a real country. Finland's not real.
I didn't know this. Cam called me one day. He was like, you know, he likes to, you know, ruffle my feathers about the conspiracy theory things. And he was talking about...
I like how you kept it clean there. You were trying to...
I was stuttering off my words because you know what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
And he's like, the new one isn't flat Earth. Kyle, are you aware of the new one that Finland's not a real place? I'm like, what are you talking about? I play hockey with a bunch of guys from Finland. He's like, no, well, they think they're from Finland, but they're not really. I'm like, where's Timo Solani from? You know, where's Matt Sundin? Where's he from?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Actually, I think Matt Sundin's from Sweden. Sorry, messed that up, folks. But yeah, Finland is not a real place. So in this fake place, somebody saw another Neanderthal.
Not one, but two. Okay. Neanderthal-looking humanoids. Now, this is a place that, this place, Ratutavara.
Whoa.
Ratavara. I'll tell y'all this right now.
Outside of Helsinki.
It's got six A's in the name of this place.
Mm.
And the resident's name is Asaki
sure.
Maito.
That sounds Japanese.
Yep. I know. Yeah, I know. Maybe it's just ill, or maybe it's Saki or Osaka. Or
maybe it's a Japanese person who moved to Finland.
I wish I could pronounce... This is a very tricky thing.
You can pronounce the names of rivers, countries,
pretty much everything.
Pretty much everything.
But like we said, people on YouTube will point it out. I'm an idiot.
Right,
so,
here comes the word police.
That's right. So this fella says that he was chopping firewood next to his house when he came upon two beings. Now, this is back December 21st of 2017. He says, I live in a relatively secluded area with the nearest neighbor living miles away. Now, this fella's 48 years old, and he claims that he holds a PhD, and this is what I thought was the oddest thing about this story. Kyle was going to school for this very thing, a PhD in aerosol physics, yeah. And he obtained that at the University of Eastern Finland.
Yeah, this has got no chlorofluorocarbons are detected in here. Yeah. That's the one where on the back of the spray can of like Aquanet or whatever, it looks like a picture, and it looks like the world breaking apart. Did you notice that? I'm like, what is that an image of? A meteorite entering the atmosphere? What am I supposed to take from
this
picture?
On a hairspray can. Don't do that.
I don't know. You know, you see certain logos, you understand what it is, but the logo for chlorofluorocarbons, I have no idea.
So that's why, folks, like I told you, he was going to get his PhD in aerosol physics.
Flunked out. What happened was, if you really want to know the truth, and I've been kind of bummed out lately because our government shut down, so like, I haven't been and I wasn't then getting my Illuminati checks.
I knew this was going to come. The flat earth shill money. I knew this was coming.
You know,
here we go.
They pay us to tell everybody that the world is, in fact, a globe. And since the government shut down, we haven't been getting our checks. I'm kind of frustrated. I had that money earmarked for my trip to Colorado. I got the kids jumping up and down. They're wanting to do this. They're wanting to go to the hot springs. They're wanting to eat fondue. All this stuff. And nope, no Illuminati money.
No Illuminati money. God, okay.
Anyway,
here we go. He says this, that, you know, he lives miles away from any neighbor, and he says that the weather was dry and cold, and he said it was well below freezing, said there was already even a layer of snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And he says, I like this, he said, after firing up the stove in his sauna, he went back to the house to have a snack. He said, I checked through the window if the smoke was still coming from the sauna's chimney, and I noticed two vaguely humanoid figures exiting the sauna, leaving the door open and just stalking off into the woods. Yeah, now he says that these two creatures were big humanoids walking in a hunched posture. He says, after I lost sight of the figures in the woods, I checked the sauna, and it had warmed already pretty well, only that the door was left open, you know, letting the warmth out. He said, I produced an electric torch, you know, a light, from the room there in the sauna. And he said, I saw, you know, use the light. And he said, I went around to try to see. And he said, I saw that the unexpected visitors had left brownish, coarse hair around. And he went on to say that he even found footprints of these alleged creatures. And he says that they looked to be barefoot. He said it was hard to examine them on the snow and in the dark. He said they were just like a human track in the snow, but they were much bigger.
Wow.
So maybe Bigfoot's in there cutting weight.
Maybe weight so.
Look. Is it any crazier to believe that Bigfoot was in a sauna? A Neanderthal was in a sauna? If you're seeing a Neanderthal, might as well throw a good sauna story in there.
Right? I can imagine if Olli Jokinen was in there in the sauna, you would have mistaken him for a Sasquatch. If those of you who aren't familiar, just look up Olli Jokinen, and that's spelled with a J, J-O-K-I-N-E-N, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, here's my thing, too, is you couldn't mistaken it. Of course, I don't know if Finland has any bear. I've not looked into that. I'm sure that's coming. But...
Yeah, I don't know.
If a bear was going to open a door, since they don't have thumbs,
yeah,
they don't really open them gingerly. You know, they don't open them the way we open them.
No.
So I'm guessing that if the door was closed, because if it left ajar, it means it opens outward.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. You know, maybe with a sauna, it should open inwards also. You know what I'm saying? If it opens inward, it could have been a bear. Because especially if there's a lot of snow, you want the door opening inward. You don't want it opening outward,
that's
so you
true.
Can't get out.
Yeah,
so if it opens inward, it could have been a couple of bear. Maybe he was mistaken. I don't know. There's different ways that you could look at this whole story. But it is interesting that it was the problem that I have with, and I love the idea of the Neanderthal sighting, is it wasn't clear. It wasn't clear like the older woman sighting few weeks ago. It was, I saw these hunched over figures. You know, it's he never gives height. He never gives anything like that. So could it have been a bear? We don't really know, you know. But still, it's interesting, the idea that a Neanderthal went into the sauna and was hanging out.
Very, very interesting. Check this out. A Mexican archaeologist have discovered a 2,400-year-old burial site in which 10 skeletons were meticulously placed in a circular formation with their body parts interlocked. Now, this was written by George Dvorsky over at Gizmodo, and it's pretty interesting. He talks about how the researchers have never seen anything like this, with signs pointing to a previously unknown ritualistic practice. This incredible discovery was made near the center of Tlalpan, a city just south of Mexico City. The ancient village associated with this grave was discovered back in 2006, they say. An archaeologist with Mexico's National Institute of Anthropology and History have been conducting excavations in and around it ever since. Now, these bodies were found about 4 feet beneath a building at the Pontifical University of Mexico, which used to house classrooms, a small chapel, and dorms for priests. Of the 10 bodies discovered in this grave, archaeologists have confirmed the presence of 2 females, a male, a child, and an infant. At least 2 skeletons appear to have been intentionally deformed skulls, and some have intentionally deformed teeth. Now, if you don't know what we're talking about, you ever seen the heads on the skulls from Peru?
Yeah.
And the deformed teeth, they used to file their teeth like really sharp.
Yes.
Stuff like that. I guess it's supposed to make you scarier in battle. I don't know that they know what for. But they said there was also clay pots and rounded bowls with tiny circular openings that were also found at that site. Now, signs of cranial deformation among the remains of the ancient Mesoamericans is nothing new, they'd like to point out. It was likely done to signify a group affiliation, demonstrate social status, or as a cosmetic enhancement, but it's the orientation of the bodies that's in this grave that is particularly noteworthy. They've never seen anything like this before. The skeletons were arranged in a spiral formation around a concentric point, as if to suggest the bodies were moving around a central figure like a wheel. Now, each body was placed on its side and with arm bones interlocked. It's not immediately clear if the people died from natural causes, some kind of group-wide calamity, or if they were deliberately killed, like in some type of sacrificial ritual.
Mm-hmm.
They said the exact purpose is unknown, but they're looking into it. Now, this ancient village where they found this is one of the earliest settlements in the region. It dates back to Mexico's pre-classical period, which ran from about 1000 BC up to 250 AD. And they say it was around long before the rise of the great Aztec Empire, which peaked somewhere between 400 to 200 BC and 700 to 400 BC, known as the Ticomán phase and the Zacatenco phase. So that's when this was there. And they said archaeologists have found multiple Mesoamerican burials before, with fewer bodies and some with more bodies, but they've never seen them arranged in this order, and they don't know what this is supposed to symbolize. They don't know. But they found that the 2,400-year-old bodies, and they're in like a spiral formation, and they're interlocked. They don't know.
That's odd.
They're confused.
That's very odd.
So it just goes to show you that even today, even in Central America, I just saw, you know, we reported on it several times about them using LIDAR to penetrate through the jungle there in South America. They've already found another complex that they say is far larger than they ever imagined. So there was a bustling community there in Central and South America long before we were thought that it existed. So I love that kind of stuff. I find it very interesting. But it's about time to take a break. When we get back from the break, folks, I'm going to be talking more about some of these sightings and strange events that have been experienced by police officers and other first responders. So stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
For many, when they have an encounter with the paranormal, whether it be a shadow figure in their bedroom late at night, poltergeist activity in the kitchen, or a run-in with a large, hairy, upright, walking bipedal behemoth, the police may be the first ones that many will call. But what happens when it's the police officers themselves who come face to face with things beyond their understanding? As it turns out, there are numerous accounts from law enforcement personnel of having encounters with the unexplained, something we've actually covered before. We did an episode back on September 6th, 2016, called Strange Police Encounters. On that episode, we talked about some strange encounters with disembodied voices, strange lights, an aerial phenomenon, as well as a giant cryptid. If you haven't listened to that episode, you really should check it out. Here at Expanded Perspectives, we support all first responders. Heck, my own brother is a fireman in Arlington, Texas. Police, like firemen, have a very difficult job. Perhaps more difficult nowadays than ever. You have to remember, they're people too. Fathers, mothers, sons, daughters. And for the most part, they are just as baffled and frightened as anyone else who has had an encounter with the unknown. These stories are intriguing, and they seem to have a little more credibility than the average onlooker, because the police are trained observers. These accounts shed light onto what happens when the men and women of law come face to face with mysterious forces they have not been trained to deal with, and illustrate that they are only human and just as susceptible to being unsettled by such phenomenon as anyone else. This first story is very interesting. It's about a police officer who was working a normal day and then was giving some kind of message or some kind of supernatural ability to perceive a threat. It's simply called The Warning. Police officers, and just about anyone with experience in the realm of violence, understand the concept of, I had a gut feeling. I had had my share of them in Vietnam, and on the city streets as a cop. But this time, a pleasant afternoon in August, the feeling was different, because it came at me out of the blue, when I was engaged in a no-big-deal traffic stop. Let me illustrate the difference between what is considered a typical kind of gut feeling in police work and what I experienced on that summer day. The previous winter, other officers and I responded to an armed robbery of a veterinarian hospital in which staff and customers, to include the off-duty cop, were forced into a large dog cage. The cop was carrying his weapon, but he was quickly overpowered and disarmed. Just as we arrived at the hospital, dispatch told us three armed holdup men had fled out the back door. One officer went into the hospital to gather information, and the rest of us began a coordinated search of the back lot and the connecting backyards of private residences. There were a number of stacked kennels in the lot, waist-high weeds, two sheds, and an old garage. This was before cops called SWAT for every little thing, so the three of us searched the kennels, the small buildings, and behind a six-foot-high wooden fence surrounding the lot. All the while we looked, it felt as if we were being watched. This wasn't unusual, because it fell within the parameters of the situation. Our search ended when police units checking side streets around the hospital radioed that they had caught the suspects. The holdup men subsequently admitted to hiding in a garage loft in the next yard over, a place from which they could see our movements as we searched. Again, there was nothing supernatural about the feeling of being watched, because we were at the scene of a crime just moments after the suspects had fled. But it was a different situation on that August afternoon on a tree-lined residential area. The day was beginning to heat up, and the neighborhood streets were quiet, probably because anyone not at work was staying inside out of the sun. There was no other traffic, no barking dogs, not even a chirping bird, just quiet. A driver blew through a stop sign like it was a green light, and I pulled him over in front of a two-story white house. I never liked writing citations, figuring a simple stop and a warning was good enough to get most drivers' heads out of wherever they had been and back on the task of paying attention to the road. The driver was pleasant, apologetic, and he even thanked me. That's when I felt it. My heart rate suddenly accelerated, and a tingling sensation danced up my spine to bristle the fine hairs at the back of the base of my neck. This wasn't anything new to me, as I'd felt it to a greater and lesser degree many times in Vietnam, and at least once or twice a week on high-risk situations on the police job, such as kicking in a door, on a dangerous warrant service, or going up against a man with a gun in a tavern. But on a pleasant summer day, on a sleepy street, just didn't make sense. I bid the driver a good day and watched him pull away from the curb. It clearly hadn't been the traffic stop giving me the heebie-jeebies, because the feeling intensified. I made a 360-degree turn, scanning the sidewalks in all directions, as well as the streets as far as I could see, north, south, west, and then east. I looked over at the big house I was parked in front of and the ones on each side of it. Nothing. I didn't see anything suspicious with the houses on the other side of the street. So why was my adrenaline revving up? With the fight-or-flight juices percolating in my veins, and with no one whom to do battle with, and no threat to back away from, I headed back to my car. But before I could get there, the feeling worsened. My heart was thumping now, my eyes watering, and goosebumps were out on my arms. I had to get in the car, and I had to do so quickly. Now, a lot of officers refer to their police units as their office, and for some, they think of their car as a protective shield against threats and dangers from forces outside of it. This is an illusion, of course, because the car doesn't protect against anything other than the weather. In fact, it makes for a larger target. Officers know this but still they take some comfort once they slip inside and shut the door. But getting into my car didn't alleviate any of the feelings. I again scanned all four sides. Nothing. I mean nothing, man. Not until I accelerated away from the curb did the sensation start to lessen. Two blocks away, I pulled under another shade of a big tree and sat for a moment as my heart rate returned close to normal. My anxiety decreased, and my adrenaline began to cool. Eventually, I returned to patrol, and my shift ended 3 hours later without incident. The next day, my sergeant asked me to see him after roll call. So I did, and he said, "Hey, did you stop a car on 63rd and Fleet Tuesday?" I said, "I know nothing. I wasn't even there." I said it with a smirk, of course. When he didn't smile back at me, I told him. The guy blew a stop sign and I gave him a verbal. Why, is he complaining? I didn't understand why he would file a complaint. I was pleasant to him and he was pleasant to me. He said, "Did you stop him in front of a White House? A big one? Two stories?" I said, "I didn't block their driveway. Did the owners call?" Then I remembered the terrible case of the creeps I had on the traffic stop. More accurately, the rush of dread I had after it. My sergeant said, "You better sit down." A young woman came into this precinct last night. She said a uniformed officer was in front of her house yesterday afternoon talking to a driver. Now, apparently her fiancé has a real hate for cops. He's an ex-con. "Okay," I said, wondering where this was going. "Well, her boyfriend, he saw you through the window. And he apparently started flipping out. He told his girlfriend he was going to shoot you. So, he retrieved a rifle, loaded it, and propped the barrel up on the windowsill. He had you lined up in his sights and was about to fire when the woman leaped at him and tried to get the rifle away. Apparently, you drove off while they were rolling around fighting on the floor. He got the weapon back, and he was majorly upset to see you had left. So, he beat her up pretty badly. She got away, and that's when she came here to the precinct." I slumped deeper into my chair, struggling for air. "It was a close one," the sergeant said, with a shake of his head. "Be careful out there. You just used up your good karma." Now, this next one is known as the light. There have long been stories about Oxford-Milford Road in Ohio's Butler County. Depending on whom you talk to, you will get varying accounts of what supposedly happened, as well as what you might experience there yourself. Some call it the legend, and others call it the light. But by whatever name, it's basically the same story told about similar places all around the world. Blink your headlights 3 times, and you will see a light appear in the distance, and then come towards you, only to disappear, or some variation thereof. I never gave the one on Oxford-Milford Road much credibility until a deputy and I experienced it. Every year, especially around Halloween, we would get repeated calls up there about cars parked on the roadway and partially in people's yards. It was usually younger folks, mostly teenagers, from all over, as well as students from nearby Miami University that came to get spooked on the lonely countryside road. We would always run them off, telling them there was nothing to see. Occasionally, and just for the fun of it, we would head up a ways to a crossroad, turn on our spotlights, and move slowly towards the crowd. Almost every time, the kids dispersed before we got all the way to them. Well, one late Halloween night, another deputy and I were dispatched to Oxford-Milford Road on suspicious activity at a roadway construction site. As we neared, we noticed what appeared to be someone carrying a light of some kind that emitted a weak yellowish glow. We assumed it was a someone, though we couldn't see the figure. Then, just like that, the yellowish light disappeared. We scanned the area with our spotlights and got out on foot with our flashlights to look around. Not finding anyone or seeing any damage to the equipment, we cleared the call. Just to make sure, we did another cruise around the site before driving back up to the usual parking spots to shoo a few people away. Then it was coffee time at a little joint in Oxford. Cops are used to having their lunches and coffee breaks interrupted, and such was the case this night. We had no more than gotten our cups filled when dispatch sent us back to the same construction site on the very same complaint. Again, we saw the strange light as we pulled up to the scene. We checked the area, and once again it was gone. This time, we decided to wait out whoever it was. We positioned our cars side by side where we had a good view of the construction area and the nearby road. We chatted. We watched and chatted some more. Then, we saw a light. This one, round and brighter than the one in the construction site, was coming straight towards us on the road, silently. Just as I told the other deputy that it was the quietest motorcycle I'd ever heard, or not heard, the light descended where the road dips. We waited for it to come back up, but it didn't. There were no houses or intersecting roads in the area. The road remained dark and silent. The other deputy and I drove down to the dip, expecting to find a bicycle or a broken down motorcycle at the bottom. But there was nothing, not even marks in the grass at the sides of the road. Up to this point, I hadn't given the urban legend any thought, and I was busy trying to figure out why we hadn't found anyone on the work site or at the bottom of the dip. We decided to head back to the construction area. The plan was that I would get out on foot on the far side and check around where we had seen the light earlier. At 2:38 a.m., I remember the time distinctly, we both saw it again, but this time the light was moving to and fro as if someone were carrying a lantern of some kind. I watched the light. I assumed a male was carrying it until it came within 20 feet of me. Then I lit him up with my flashlight. There was nothing. He, or whatever it was, had disappeared. A second earlier, the light was only 6 or 7 strides away. Then it was gone. Not even a flittering firefly. Nothing. I radioed the other deputy and told him what had happened, but by the time I got back to my car, he was gone. When I ran into him sometime later, it was apparent that he was still shook up about what had happened. While he appeared unsettled and confused about the whole ordeal, he said he was glad of one thing, that it was me who got so close to the light, and not him. This next story takes place at a hospital morgue, and I think you'll find it pretty entertaining. I worked security at 2 local hospitals before I became a police officer. One of my many duties was to oversee conditions in the basement morgue. It made me a little nervous at first, but it helped that the job was simple. Check the temperature of the room every few hours, transport the deceased from their hospital rooms to the morgue, and process paperwork. One night when I was still new, my superior said I had earned my stripes and was ready to work by myself. She advised me that officers at shift change had lodged 2 bodies in the morgue. After completing my indoor patrol, I headed down to the basement to make a morgue check. The architects must have had a sense of humor because they enhanced the creep factor by designing the hallway to the cold room to be dark and maze-like. Once inside, I checked over the body roster and opened the heavy door to the walk-in cooler, and I froze in place. Something was inside with the 2 bodies. It was a dark, shadowy figure, 6 feet tall, yet I could see through it, and it was bending over one of the bagged bodies. I remained motionless, except for the goosebumps spreading over my arms, and I was suddenly cold, more deeply cold than the temperature of the cooler. Seconds passed before I was able to shut the cooler door and rush out of the morgue, locking the outer door securely behind me. Shocked and in disbelief of what my eyes had truly seen, I hurried down the hall to make distance from that room. Because I was new, I didn't know my supervisor very well, I decided not to say anything. But after a few weeks of getting comfortable with her, I took a chance and I described what I had seen that night. After my story, she smiled and laughed. "Does she think I'm crazy?" I wondered. "Don't worry," she said. You'll have plenty more experiences like that, working in this place. Then she added these words. Understand this. A hospital is a gateway between the living and the dead. We've all had things happen to us here. One night, sometime after my experience in the morgue, I was called to remove the body of a man who had just died. My shift partner hated going anywhere near the morgue because of an experience he refused to talk about. But I needed help, so I called him on my radio to meet me in the patient's room. I retrieved a gurney and got there first, noting the refreshment cart in the hall outside the door. This typically indicated someone was about to pass on, and the hospital was kindly offering something for the family and friends that had gathered to say their goodbyes. Because the curtains were closed around the man's bed to allow the bereaved a little more time, I went over to the nurse's station to pick up his paperwork. I asked a nurse how long she thought the family would be, and she said they had all left about an hour earlier. My partner still hadn't made it to the floor, so I wrestled the cart inside the room and pushed aside the curtain. Whoops! An elderly man, a friend or a brother, was sitting on the couch, his head in his hands. Oh, I said, sorry. I was told that everyone had... I closed the curtain and quickly stepped back, bumping into the nurse who had come to help me transfer the body. She said, what's wrong? Why did you step back like that? And I said, well, there's still a family member in there with him. You know, he's mourning. I wanted to give him some more privacy and some time. What? She pushed past me and pulled the curtain open. No one's in here. See? The sofa was empty. On the bed lay a zipped closed body bag. At first, I was startled. Where had the man... I could feel something there in that space. Some kind of presence. And I knew I could feel that it was... Well, that it was watching. My partner finally showed up and the nurse left. After we wrestled the bag over onto the gurney, I asked him to wait a second. Because of what I had seen in the morgue and just now on the sofa, I felt a compelling need to look into the body bag. I slowly moved the zipper down, far enough to move the material aside, to see the face. I sucked in my breath. It was the man I had seen sitting on the couch a few minutes earlier. I looked up at my partner. I struggled to collect myself. I wanted to see. I know, he said, as if he knew what I was going to tell him. I've had the same thing happen to me. His eyes moved around the partially curtained off area. Let's get out of here, he said. We're being watched. I've got one more story for you. This one has to deal with, I don't know if you want to call it demons or possession or someone possessed. I don't know. I think you'll find it interesting. It's by an officer named Rich Perez. And he says, I've been on the Houston Police Department for nearly 23 years. And I've served in the U.S. Navy, both active and reserves, for nearly 29. I've done two tours in the Iraq War, the last one working with the Army. I didn't begin believing in God and the supernatural until after some things happened in my middle teens, good and some not so good, that I couldn't explain. As a realist, I searched for answers to what these occurrences meant, and I found a connection with the spiritual side that blew me away. It allowed me to no longer fear death, and it compelled me to always listen to that benevolent inner voice. It has not only saved my life on the job, but the voice has made decisions I would not have made before it entered my life. I've also had experiences with what I believe to have been unseen assailants. On three occasions, beginning in 2009, I was injured repeatedly by what I conclude to be some type of malevolent spirit. I can't validate this because I've never felt the assaults as they happened. I discovered the injuries, long scratches, on my body afterwards. I did, however, find a pattern to them. Each one happened on a domestic disturbance call with a highly dysfunctional family unit of 3 to 5 members. Each occurred in an apartment in disarray with blinds closed and lights dimmed on bright, sunny Texas days. I always try to do what feels right on family disturbance calls. Sometimes it's just a talk. Sometimes it's an arrest of one or more participants. And other times I meditate with a positive spiritual spin. Before leaving a family, I typically say, "Open up the blinds, man. Let some of God's light in here. It's free." The first time I got home after handling a domestic disturbance call, during my shift, I began peeling off my gun belt, then my shirt, and vest. This was my routine. But before I could completely remove my vest, I felt a burning pain on my back. Then, when I pulled off my t-shirt, my wife jokingly asked, "Who have you been sleeping with?" I told her nobody today. She laughed and told me there were scratches all over my back. When I looked in the mirror, sure enough, I found two long, thin scratches running diagonally from my right shoulder to just above my left hip. I figured my vest somehow must have scratched me through my t-shirt. But that didn't make sense, because the shirt is worn to protect the skin. About a year later, I went to another family fight that had the same elements as the one described before. This was a small apartment, dimly lit, and there was a dysfunctional family living in it. I did my best to patch things up with my usual positive intervention with a spiritual twist. I came home, peeled off my uniform, and felt that same burning sensation on my back as I had the time before. This time, I discovered three thin marks, also diagonal, but running in the opposite direction, from my lower left shoulder to my right hip. The middle scratch was longer than those on each side of it. The last time I experienced this was in 2014. I went to another family fight in an apartment. The same scenario, closed curtains, dim lighting, on a sunny day, with another dysfunctional family. I gave my usual lecture, but this time, I took one of the family members to jail on a warrant. I went home, stripped off my gear, and when I removed my vest, I once again felt that same burning sensation. This time, I found two horizontal scratches across my back. Now, I've handled many domestic disturbance calls on the job, but these three all had the exact same elements. I've shared my stories with a few other officers, but not one of them has experienced the same thing. So, with their guns and badges, police officers are often looked up to in their community. They are protectors of our village. They're always on watch, even while we sleep. People confuse this authority, this responsibility, with the false belief that police officers are unshakable and fearless enforcers of the law, and that they have all the answers. But in reality, they are just as likely to be perplexed, confused, and scared by any paranormal encounters as anyone else. You see, shadow beings don't care if you're a cop. Dogman doesn't care if you're a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. And demonic spirits, they rarely care how proficient you are with your Springfield Army 45 ACP. Badge or no badge, it doesn't matter. Police officers undoubtedly see many odd things every day, but these are things they can deal with and are trained for. But nothing, and I mean nothing, can prepare you for a chance encounter with the unknown. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I like those stories. You know, that's one of my favorite parts is getting stories from the listeners and things. But to see these stories from more reliable witnesses, sometimes for me, solidifies what they're seeing more intently in my mind. Because police officers are trained observers. That's what they do. They're out there driving around or walking around or whatever, and they're looking. They know how to, they can see a drug deal go down long before the average person would. They know what looks out of place because most of them work the same area. So you become familiar with the players and the playboys in that area. You know what I'm saying? You're like, oh, that's, what's his name? He's got some health issues, and the reason he's walking like that is because he's got a bad leg. He's nothing wrong with him. He's not under the influence. He's not causing anybody any trouble. Then you would notice, like, oh, wait a minute. I've never seen that guy here before. What's he up to? Yeah. You just kind of notice things.
Anybody, I believe, that's a trained observer, and it you don't even necessarily, I guess, have to be a police officer. It's one of those things that if you spent enough time doing your job, the interaction with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like any job. If you were selling ice cream at the same little ice cream stand over and over and over for years, you would get to know everybody. And it's one of those things when somebody comes by, it's one of those, you're a trained observer in your area, like people listening right now in their office. You're a trained observer in that office. The only thing with the police officers, they have to be a trained observer in a lot of areas, in a lot, and they have to...
Notes.
If, and I'm sure the answer is yes, but after a while, they get that spider sense. Like we always talk about, I feel like they always seem to have, like even the military guys have talked about it, where they have that heightened sense of awareness. The police are always on, like, if everybody's, you know, a 0 to a 10, and most everybody's awareness is about a 4, theirs is probably bumping about an 8 or a 9 all the time while they're doing their stuff. It may dip a little bit. So that's one of those things, is their awareness and their ability, like you're talking, is that observer, that trained observer thing, is it always, for some reason, it adds a little more validity to me, and I don't know why that is.
No, it shouldn't.
It does.
I'm not trying to say that other people, unless you're a cop or something, that your stories are complete.
Yeah, but I mean, bogus. It does. It does add a little bit more credence to it. And I like the same thing when we talk about airplane pilots, when they see things in the sky. They're trained for that. So when they see things that they report on, it feels like you should give them a little more respect to their stories. But crazy people could be in the planes.
You're 100%
and crazy
right.
People be cops,
but it
too.
Just makes you feel better. I mean, like, if your grandmother tells you what you should do to get rid of a cold, or a doctor, I'm naturally going to assume the doctor knows more.
Yeah, right?
But even though my grandmother might be well-versed in how to cure sickness because she's far older than the doctor. You know, she's been around a while.
And hers may work, too. It's funny.
But you, for whatever reason, you put more credence in the doctor. Look, the doctor said, you know.
Yeah.
I doubt he's just making stuff up.
Yeah, although he might.
Now, look, just like any other profession, there's crazy doctors.
Yeah.
I've talked to a few.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm with you, though, I enjoy those sightings and those stories.
I like those sightings. Cam, I know you're a huge football fan. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
We had this discussion. Both of us had totally forgot it was on. And then neither one of us really knew who was playing. We had to think about that for a few minutes. We're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Nah, I was more interested in the fights Saturday night. I'm more interested in the fights coming up this weekend, things like that. So, yeah,
I mean, it's
Luke Rockhold fights this weekend, man.
I'm excited about that. I didn't purposely miss the Super Bowl. I just kind of forgot about it. I'm not a big NFL guy, but it doesn't mean I don't like football, because I was binge watching Coach Snoop on Netflix.
Yeah, you were telling me
when the Super Bowl was on. It was actually pretty good. If you like Snoop Doggy Dog and you like football.
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting series. It's like 8 episodes long. Each episode's like 20 minutes long, so you can binge watch it in a night.
If you don't,
what I did. Also, I saw
like swearing. Don't let your kids watch it.
No, yeah, there's a lot of swearing. There's a new edition of Cloverfield that I saw that came out.
It's like a movie. Yeah, I saw that.
I saw it on Netflix that night. I did not watch it yet. I'm gonna probably plan to.
Altered Carbon, Brett. I'm telling
you. Told me about that. Now that's a new series you said is really good.
I'm a fan so far.
I'm still working through Black Sails. I'm almost done with it.
Yeah, there you go. I'm a fan. Altered Carbon, I'm a big fan of it. And I forget the main character. I forget his name. He was in The Killing, and He was one of the main dudes in what was that called? Suicide Squad. He was like the cop that was dating the crazy witch lady.
I did not see that movie either.
And then he was also the new RoboCop, the guy that played the new RoboCop. He's the guy in Altered Carbon. I forget his name. I think he's a cool actor. He's a great big son of a gun too. So yeah. It's a good deal. He's yoked in this altered state. Like he comes out there with his shirt off. You're like, damn, bro, you've been hitting the gym or what? Yeah, he's been drinking his milk and eating his vegetables like Hulk Hogan said. Take your vitamins, get a lot of sleep. That's how Hulk Hogan got big, folks. That and a lot of supplements that come out of a needle. But
lots of Mexican vitamins.
That's right. He was getting really big.
Well, that's cool, man. What do you got planned before we head out of town to Colorado?
I'm trying to just, I got a lot of work that I've got to squeeze in. I'm getting a bunch of stuff calibrated this whole week. A bunch of my equipment calibrated for my testing. It's one of those things, it's like you and I discussed. Every time we get ready to go do something, it seems like everything converges where you got to cram all this work into it to get it done. And then now with the rain supposed to come in, it's going to kind of, you know, throw a kink in a few things. But that's really it. I mean, I don't have anything super pressing. Normal stuff, just kind of a pain, but...
That's me. I'm just trying to get everything squared away so I can get out of town for a week. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Don't forget, if you like Expanded Perspectives and you want to help us out, the best way you can do that is to write us a review on iTunes.
That's right.
That would really help out. We're trying to get to 1,000 in the year 2018, so that would be awesome if you could do that. Also, if you're a fan of Expanded Perspectives and you want more, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. We do an additional show every week, and you get access to that as well as the entire back catalog. Over 3 years worth of shows, all for $5. You got to go to the website to sign up, expandedperspectives.com. I almost said at yahoo.com. The website is expandedperspectives.com. Our email is expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Or you can call the show 817-945-3828. And we get lots of questions all the time. Is the back catalog still available? It is. I don't know for how much longer, but right now it still is available. So yeah. Sign up now. Cam, we got a pretty interesting interview coming up.
Yeah,
and
yes,
I'm
we
excited
do.
About that. So, people, in the next couple of weeks while we're out of town, we're still going to be coming out with the show, so don't worry. We got some interesting, a very interesting interview coming up. I think you're going to like this guy. Yeah. Really knows his stuff, and I can't wait for that. Well, that's about all we have time for this week. Please be careful for you. Elite members will be speaking to you later this week. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next week. For Pretty Lights, Inner Tradition Books, New Page Books, Anomalous Books, Llewellyn Books, and Ancient American Magazine, I'm Kyle Filson, and he's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Class is now in session. And the UPS store is here to help you ace arriving on campus. Our certified packing experts can pack everything you need, from desktops to decor. Plus, when you pack and ship with us, you get our exclusive pack and ship guarantee. Your items arrive safe or your money back. Restrictions and limitations apply. To get a 20% off packing coupon and for full details, visit theupsstore.com/packing.